The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters.
If you really want to figure out if a headshot photographer is any good, when you're looking at their portfolio, look at it in your superficial way, and the do I like it, you know, you should like it. But when you're looking at the shots, cover up the mouth with your finger. Can you still tell the person smiling? If you can, that's a good shot and probably a good photographer. If you see a few in there where you can't tell they're smiling or they look freaked out, there's probably a bad reason why the photographer put that one in their portfolio, and it's probably because they didn't see the difference. So cover up the mouths. Do all the eyes look smiling and confident? If yes, that's a good person who can coach you on other stuff.
Hi, and welcome to The Hearing. I am Tanae Frazier, your host for this week's episode. And on today's episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Chris Gillette. He is the owner of Chris Gillette Photography. He's not only a photographer, but he's also a former attorney who now specializes in creating wonderful headshots for attorneys. In this episode, Chris shares some of his tips and tricks on how we can project confidence and presence in front of the camera. He also talks about how we can use headshots as a marketing tool. And not only that, Chris goes into some of the common mistakes that we're guilty of when we're in front of the camera. And those mistakes include how we're using body language, our posture, and even our micro expressions. In this episode, Chris shares some practical advice on how to choose a headshot photographer and how to prepare for our headshots. I really enjoyed my conversation with Chris, and I learned a lot of things on how to create a wonderful headshot, and not only that, but how to be confident in front of the camera and how to use those skills in my day-to-day life.
The Hearing.
I am so excited to chat with you about all things headshots, and really specifically how attorneys can use their headshots to strategically communicate their professional brand. But before we get started chatting about headshots, I really want to chat about you a little bit. Now, you're the owner of Chris Gillette Photography, and you specialize in creating professional headshots for attorneys and, you know, corporate individuals, just all ranges of areas. But that is not your entire claim to fame. You were once a trial attorney, and not only that, also an adjunct professor at the University of Houston Law Center. Some might say that was a drastic change in career. Tell me, how did you transition from a career in law to now a career in photography?
Well, tonight, it's great to be here. You know, I've been looking forward to visiting with you. We've talked before, and I love visiting with you. So this is gonna feel like we're just sitting down to talk, which I love. And you're right, it's a drastic change, but it's not an unprecedented one. I think lawyers will all say, oh yeah, I know. We know a lot of people who don't lawyer anymore. Yeah. I've thought about not lawyering anymore. You know, Susie and I want to buy a vineyard, or, you know, we've all got a little dream that is sometimes not law, which I get. I could make this a 30-minute story, but the shorter version is I never liked being a lawyer. Mm. I was one of those people who I felt like it wasn't a great fit for me, but, you know, whatever. I didn't know what I wanted to do, so went to law school, and then the next thing you know, litigation. So I did that for about 19 years, and prior to the end, so I've got three kids, and two of them are in their 20s now, but I've got a kid who's 16 now, and so there's a gap. And when I found out that we were having him, that's when I got the idea, hey, maybe I'll get a camera. You know, 16 years ago, now it's like you just pull your phone out of your pocket and take a picture of your kid's birthday or whatever. But, you know, back then they either weren't around or they had just barely emerged, and the cameras were terrible. So wasn't an option. So I bought a used camera, started learning how to use it, and just was a hobby for a while. And then I guess I'd started to get better at it, and I'd maybe put some family pictures on Facebook, and I was kind of getting happy with what I was doing with it finally. And a friend who'd seen him called me one day, and he said, hey, man, can you take a headshot of me? I need a headshot for work. And I don't know what made me think I could do it. Like, I never liked my lawyer headshots. They were terrible. But for some reason, I said, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, I can do it. And he was a good-looking guy. And while he was not disappointed in what we did, I was. Mm. So that got me on the path to, how do you do this? That took a while. That's a long story. But I eventually started to figure it out. And then one day I get this picture of myself that changed how I felt about myself. Mm. It was like, okay, I don't look like Clooney, but I look pretty good. I should be happy with this. And I was proud of it. And so that became addictive to do for friends, family, freebies. I was getting more at-bats, more reps. And I, at some point, decided to do it or to charge for it because I thought my work was as good as, you know, other people in town. And I did that for a while. I guess now we call that a side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was just sitting around thinking about how miserable I was. And honestly, I was in one of my buddy's offices. It was December 2015, and we were having one of those end of the year talks. And that's when it finally hit me. I'd never conceived of doing this for a living. It's not like I had thought about it and then rejected it. I never thought of it as a possibility. And then December in that guy's office, I'm going to mention him because he's a great trial lawyer, a guy named Kit Ashby here in Houston. Great guy, former Marine, did the JAG thing, great trial lawyer. And we were buddies and having that kind of end of the year talk, and my book of business had constricted a little bit. And that's when I said, and I can't say since this is a fine Thomson Reuters product what I said to him, but I said some version of, man, the problem is I just hate this stuff. And that's when it clicked. I was like, wait a minute. You know, I thought maybe I could go do that other thing. And since it's a legal podcast, I'll mention this. The firm was lovely about it. It did not precipitate the night of the long knives. They were very encouraging. Hey, what can we do to help? And I used to well up telling that part of the story, but I'm immune now. But anyway, so I thought, all right, I'll give myself a year. I'll see what I can make happen. And I should have given myself 6 months because it took a year. But I finally got flush with business and haven't looked back since. And I've never been happier.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that you took a headshot and you were not happy with it. But then there was a change. Something happened later in life where you said, well, you had a headshot done and you feel confident about it. Tell me a little bit more about that.
That's a good question because it's kind of fundamental to what I do. So when I would get my lawyer headshots, and I think a lot of people can sympathize with this, I'd get that email that said, hey, Chris, we need you next Tuesday, 10:20 in the auxiliary conference room, wear a dark suit. We're doing headshots. And I thought, oh, man, again, I can't tell you what I thought, but I thought something very pejorative about it. It was like, ah, and it was just, you know, it's frustrating. It's a feeling of helplessness. Like maybe there was that one time in college where somebody took a picture of me at a party and I didn't know I was being photographed and I thought it looked kind of cool.
Yeah.
But normally I don't like myself in pictures. And so I was not anticipating capturing lightning in a bottle that Tuesday at 10:20. And honestly, this sounds made up, but I was in my bathroom the night before looking in the mirror at myself and just kind of trying different smiles, thinking, well, I know I've seen guys look cool in pictures. What do I do?
Yeah.
And couldn't come up with anything. And so anyway, so I show up, the guy sits me down and then he says, okay, Mr. Gillette, smile.
Yeah.
Click. Mm. 1, 2, 3, click. Essentially leaving it up to me. And as I've demonstrated, I had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
And that's what they typically would do. By the way, I'm very ugly about it now because at the time I thought, it's 100% my fault. That's what I look like. That's what I get, right? Never occurred to me that if that bozo knew what he was doing, I might actually like how I looked, or maybe I'd look cool or something like that. And I didn't. Mm. I ended up looking crazy. Did not look confident, that's for sure. If anything, I looked scared. And it didn't look genuine because I was doing a fake smile. Maybe I looked like I was happy to be there. That might be the best thing you could say about it. And at that time, I only was thinking about, do I like the picture? And I'm sure we'll get to this at some point, because that's how most people think about it. Hey, do I like the picture? Did I look good? Do I like how I looked? I didn't like how I looked. I didn't like that picture. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
It's pretty superficial. And it's important, of course. It's nice to like how you look in the shot and think, hey, I like how I look. I bet other people are going to like this. But that's as far as it got. And then when I started to figure it out, as I said, changed how I felt about myself. Mm. It took my self-acceptance gap down to a more manageable level.
Okay.
And it changed how I felt about myself. I thought, wow, when people see this, they're going to think that I'm a nice looking guy and I'm hyper confident, not a jerk, but super, super confident. And knowing that I had that out there representing me felt fantastic. And maybe it sounds kind of weak, but it was definitely a boost to my confidence from that point on.
Mm. Now, you mentioned how when the photographer sat you down, they just tell you, turn this way, smile, and you just go with it. A lot of people feel like they're not photogenic, and it may not be because they're not photogenic. It may just be positioning angles, the different ways that they're being posed to sit or whatever. But tell me a little bit more about how you as a photographer, you knowing that this was a confidence boost for you, how do you approach that now when you're taking pictures of others and doing their headshots?
So there's a couple of things there. The first issue is being photogenic. One of the greatest misconceptions that people have about people pictures is that some folks are just photogenic. It's just how they are. Nature bestowed upon them some magical set of facial features that always makes them look good. And I'm not saying that the way you show up isn't a factor, because of course it is. I've been doing this long enough now that I've shot people more than once. Mm-hmm. And I can tell when they come in, have they been taking care of themselves or not? I could say sometimes they look worse when they come in, and sometimes they look better. Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference, that is for sure. But the number one thing that changed between, because I'm an okay looking guy, I still got my hair, mm-hmm. you know, my jawline's okay. I'm all right. Like, not the best, but I feel like I'm doing okay. Probably like everybody. You know, I think, oh, maybe I'm a tiny bit above average. I guess that's probably what a lot of people think. But that's another topic for another guest.
Okay.
But when I would get in front of the camera, it wouldn't come. It didn't help me. None of that helped me. Hey, I still got my hair. Well, great. But it didn't make me look more confident or more handsome or more likable in the shot. And that's because the expression is the thing that makes the biggest difference. The light's really important, but the expression is huge. And I know it sounds like hooey. I know it's like, oh, come on, that's hokey. But if nothing else, take my word for it. It makes a big difference.
Okay.
And now how you get people there, the answer to that is that when I first meet a person, or before I've met them, I have no idea because everybody's different. As soon as I see them and start interacting with them, I start to get an idea about it. I see how you act when you mill around. I kind of see what equipment you're working with. Mm-hmm. I see what you normally do. And that starts to give me a clue to certain things like, well, this is probably her better angle. Not 100% sure, but that'd be my guess. And she looks more like a teeth smiler. Doesn't mean we're not going to try a lips together smile, but she seems more like a teeth smiler. So I'll start to figure out some of these things. Mm-hmm. But the true answer is, I don't know how I get individuals there until I start working with them, but I know what the goal is. Mm. For example, this is the great thing about this, is that the expression stuff is science. Humans do certain things with their faces in certain situations. When you're confident, certain things happen. Certain muscles move on the face. When you're smiling authentically, certain muscles move on the face. It's true for all of us. It's not cultural. It's not learned. It's just a human thing. And so I know those. How I get you there is part of the fun of it. So say I get somebody in front of the camera and maybe she's like 80% of the way there. Why? I don't know. I'm not going to quiz her. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't anthropology. I'm trying to get them a shot. But that type of person is, I'm not going to push them too much. I'm just going to nudge them the last 20% because what they're doing is pretty good. I don't want to mess it up. And to get another person in, and this guy will be like giving me the 1,000-yard stare at all times. Mm. And just, I wish they could see what I'm doing, but he'll just kind of be one of these guys where he's just, you know, his eyes are wide open and mm-hmm. he's just, hey, you know, be a sweet guy. Oh, everybody knows Roy. He's a puppy dog. He's such a, but he doesn't look super confident. And that guy, who knows? Maybe I have to demonstrate it for him. Sometimes I can just say certain things that, I can't say on this podcast, but okay. I can say certain things. They're like magic words that'll just make people kind of go in that right direction. And honestly, that's part of the fun for me is because it's very improvisational. I don't know. And that's just some of the superficial surface level stuff. If it's, let's say, you know, it's Roy again, God knows what Sally Smith said to him in eighth grade that he's still carrying around with him. That'll affect it.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we have a lot of stuff we have to figure out, but everybody's different. And the reason it works for me is that I know what the end result should look like.
Good. Now, why should attorneys invest in professional headshots? I know that one area is just putting a face with a name, but beyond that, why should they invest in professional headshots?
Well, this is another good question, because I think a lot of lawyers, in fact, I think a lot of people who are involved in lawyer marketing do not have very sophisticated answers to this question. And I'll say at the beginning, look, this is just how I feel about it. It doesn't mean that it's the only answer, but it's the best answer I've heard so far. And it's that, what do lawyers have to market? What are they marketing? They're marketing, I think, in most cases, a certain perceived level of expertise. And go Google headshots and perceived level of expertise. You'll see nothing on it unless I said it. But I think that's it. And if you think about it, especially these big firms with a lot of resources, they'll do all sorts of things to try to make it look like they're good at what they do. They'll have the Class A office space. They'll have the zillion-dollar build-out. They'll have the weird, expensive art on the walls. Like, you know, all the, I mean, maybe part of it's attracting good talent. Hey, like, we're in a good environment. But I think a big part of it is, hey, look, we're good at what we do. Yeah. Look at our resources, you know. Well, the interesting thing is that those firms especially, when it comes to headshots, for them, it's very perfunctory. It's just like, yeah, we got to do it. Everybody does it. It'd be weird if we didn't do it. But the headshot is, it's probably the thing that makes a first impression on a lot of lawyers, potential clients, and employers and peers. And it's the one thing that they don't take seriously usually. And it's so weird, because, you know, they don't, very often there'll be situations I know where it's like, hey, I'm the GC for a company and I want to, you know, cover myself. And so I'll say, I'm going to hire this prestigious firm. So if it goes south, I can say, well, I hired this big prestigious firm. But for a lot of clients, it's the individual lawyer. It's, ooh, I heard Joe Smith did a really good job on that M&A deal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go talk to him. And then you go clickety-clack, and they look you up. And maybe Joe, like, maybe he looks like a scared child. Yeah. Or maybe he's shot his clearly 15 years old. It doesn't make a good first impression. I think that most of my clients come to me because they want to make a good first impression, and they want to take control of what that first impression is, because there's not a right way to do it. I think it's usually some version of, hey, I like how I look, and I look some degree of confident and some degree of likable. And there's going to be a ratio to that confidence to likability. Some people are going to look a little more confident than likable, and some are going to want to look a little more likable than confident. They might say, hey, I want to look like the guy that they can imagine telling their story to. Mm-hmm. And then the next guy will come in and say, hey, I want to look like I'm not going to get out-lawyered. They're both right. It's however you want to present yourself. But taking control of that is super important. And you'll notice that we're now not talking about, oh, do I like the picture? Which, again, not wrong, but pretty superficial. We're talking about, what image am I sending out there? And that's the piece that people, I think, really miss. Let me give you another example, because I want to drive this home, and I'll use young women this time. So three new hires at a law firm. First young woman will come in and she'll say, well, what did everybody else do? I want to do what everybody else did. Mm-hmm. And then the next young woman will come in and she'll say, man, I'm so tired of being, she probably won't say man, but she'll say, that's my version of it. Mm-hmm. I'm so tired of being underestimated. Somebody thought I was a secretary the other day. I want to look really confident, maybe some gravitas. And then the third young woman will say, I like it when they underestimate me. I want to be underestimated. Mm-hmm. And none of them are wrong, but those are three wildly different goals.
Yeah.
And most people just think about it as, oh, did I like the picture? Did I wear the right necklace? You know, stuff that, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not of some importance, but if I'm ranking things, those are way at the bottom.
Now, a lot of us attorneys have a type A personality, and we want to exude this air of confidence, which you've already mentioned. But what are some simple ways that we can project confidence in front of the camera?
There are a couple of things. I'll give you some specific tips that most headshot photographers don't seem to pay attention to, because I see this done wrong all the time. The main thing is the expression on the face, and the confidence comes from the eyes. So you can see me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jacking my eyes open. Some people would say deer in the headlights. I would say, if I'm a lawyer, this is, if you can imagine me telling you, hey, we cannot try this case. We're going to get lit up.
Uh-huh.
We got to make this one go away. But when my palpebral fissures narrow, I'm trying to do the best on audio that I can. When my orbicularis oculi muscles decrease my palpebral fissures,
okay,
I go scared to, today there's nothing I can't handle. Don't worry about it. We got this. and that's it. And if you think about it, people often fight that. I can't tell you how frequently, and I can't tell you because I don't know the frequency, but it happens from time to time that I'll have a woman in front of the camera and she'll say, occasionally guys, but it's more women than men, will say, oh, I don't like it when my eyes close, narrow down when I smile. And that's the most self-defeating thing that occurs in my world, because that's what people do when they smile naturally. Mm-hmm. It's also what people do when they look confident. If you want to look inauthentic and scared, yeah, jack your eyes open. So the face is the number one thing. You gotta tense up your eye, bottom lids. You've got to let the smile hit the corners of your eyes. The other thing is that there are some body language aspects to it as well. Man, I wish I could show you this one. I'm going to show you, but I'm going to try my best to describe it. Sometimes they'll put the guy in there at an angle like this. I'm turned slightly, camera right. And my left shoulder is closer to the camera. If I all of a sudden get my head tilted this way towards that near shoulder, it looks softer and more feminine.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody gave me stage direction and said, Chris, act more feminine, I would do that. I would tilt my head towards the closer shoulder. And for my male and female clients, I want them to look good, but most of these people are lawyers. I want them to look strong too. Mm-hmm. I want them to look really confident. So usually we're going away from that closer shoulder. And even if you're having trouble visualizing it, I'll tell you what I think the root cause of it is. When I tilt towards the closer shoulder, it looks like I'm protecting my throat.
Mm.
And that's one of your soft, vulnerable areas. Hard strikes there can knock me out. So if I'm covering it up, it looks a little softer and more defensive and weaker, as opposed to when I open it up. I'm opening it up because there's nothing in front of me that threatens me. But I think that's why one looks a little softer and one looks a little stronger. And I see men posed like that, and I think on purpose, in lawyer headshots all the time. And it makes him look like a sweetie pie. And I'm sure if you asked him, do you want to look like a sweetie pie? He'd probably say, no, thank you. I'd rather not. And there's all of this stuff, there's pros and cons. These are just heuristics. Maybe if the guy's a big burly guy and he's a pediatric dentist, then okay, maybe we tie just like one gradient of tilt towards the closer shoulder to make him look a little more like a caregiver. But for most of my clients, looking really confident is a big part of the deal. And so that's something that I'm going to be mindful of.
You mentioned the body language and the posture. And if for someone that's not accustomed to angling themselves in a photo shoot, what would they need to do to make certain that they exhibit this confidence that they need or they want to exude in front of the camera?
This is going to sound like I'm selling headshots, but good luck. Good luck. It's hard. The best way to do it is to find somebody who can coach you. The best way to find somebody that can coach you, here, I'll give you a tip. This is another tip. If you really want to figure out if a headshot photographer is any good, when you're looking at their portfolio, look at it in your superficial way and do I like it? Does it look, oh, these are nice shots. I like how he does it. Or, well, you know, hers, I don't like this style as much. You know, you should like it. But when you're looking at the shots, cover up the mouth with your finger. Put your finger on the screen where you can't see the mouth. Can you still tell the person smiling? If you can, that's a good shot and probably a good photographer. If you see a few in there you can't tell they're smiling or they look freaked out, or you can, you know, in your mind's eye, imagine duct tape over the person's mouth like they just got found from that shed where the guy was keeping them, then there's probably a bad reason why the photographer put that one in their portfolio, and it's probably because they didn't see the difference. Mm. So cover up the mouths. Do all the eyes look smiley and confident? If yes, that's a good person who can coach you on other stuff. Do you see the little sweetie pie tilt? Then that's a bad sign. They don't see it. The bar in this industry has never been super high, but it's way higher now than it's ever been. And there are definitely, I know good headshot photographers all over the country, and there are people out there. That's the best way. And I know I'm not an industry spokesperson. We are not well organized. So, but that's, if I were advising my sweet sister in Alabama how to do it, that's what I'd tell her. Find somebody who can direct you. If you're on your own, I would say, unless you hate squared up straight onto the camera, that's a strong body language, and it's easier when you get off on the angles. Weird things start to happen, like that head tilt towards the closer shoulder to the camera, where you look a little sweeter. Just stay squared up to the camera and make sure that, I guess if you don't have somebody helping you, you're doing it yourself. When you review the shots, cover up your mouth. Do the eyes look smiley? If yes, then you're on the right track. And they'll be weird at first. Again, if you're not having somebody direct you, it's going to be awkward and weird. And you're going to be like, why did that Gillette guy say, narrow my eyes? I look like I'm squinting into the sun. Well, if that's the case, you're not doing it right. Because it does take some work. And it's one of the ways I got good at it. It sounds silly, but I did mirror work. I was so happy with how I looked in that first shot that I started to, hey, I'd like to do this in the real world too. And figured out how to do it on command, how to do it where I would know what it felt like. And even if I couldn't see my face, I knew what I was doing right.
That's a great segue for another area I'd like to discuss with you. And it's, what are some common mistakes that people make when they're in front of the camera, preparing for their headshot, or even just in that moment where they're taking the headshot?
Oh, man. Again, we could do an hour on this. One is, and this is going to sound like I'm beating up on people, but I'm really not. I'm one of the reasons this is a better fit for me as a career is that I like working with my clients. I get great people in here and I'm on their side. I'm proud of them. If they're here, they're probably doing some stuff pretty well. And I like them. But the way you show up makes a difference. And I guess I mentioned earlier, when people come in for repeats, I can tell how well their life's been going, at least the physical part of it. Because sometimes it's like, wow, okay, he didn't look as good as he did last time. Or, oh my God, what did you do? You look great. And then we'll start talking about that, and it's a lot of fun. But how you show up makes a difference. If you need to lose 20 pounds, you need to lose the 20 pounds. And these days, you know, it's going to be, for some folks, it's going to be even more. Not telling you how to feel. I want you to be happy, but I can tell you that when we talk about it, when we're reviewing shots, there's not a person who isn't, that's maybe not true, but it's very rare for people not to care about how they look. Mm-hmm. And how you show up makes a big difference. Clothing makes a big difference too. I'll give you some pointers that I think you're not going to hear anywhere else. So clothes. I think, you know, it's so weird because I get such great people in here, really smart people, really successful people. And I think if you leave it up to a lot of the women, they will wear their business blazer with a high crew neck top underneath it, some kind of necklace dangling over that. And then like 25% of them will do a bold lip. And, you know, do what you want. I'm not telling you how to present yourself. But to me, the bold lip is weird. It's like, it's after five. Why are we doing after five? Are we celebrating something? And then, like, the necklace doesn't make a difference. If anything, it's a negative because of what I'm about to tell you. I'm not saying that a high crew neck top never looks good, but besides a woman's face, the two most feminine things we've got going on in a headshot are her neck and collarbones. And necklines that show those, to me, look way better. It's very feminine, it's very pretty, and it's very work appropriate. And when you compare those women to the women wearing the high crew neck tops, it makes them look better. But the point of all that is that the clothes you bring matter. One of the things I do with my clients is I tell them to bring in a lot of stuff and to bring in a range of stuff, because sometimes you just don't know. If we're shooting for a small number of shots or maybe just one magic one, do they wear the jacket or do they wear a dress or a top or something like that? And I'll tell you that a shocking percentage of the time, they're going to be wrong about whatever they think. And so I like to try those things. I tell them, bring in a bunch of stuff. We got plenty of time. We're going to run through it. Because you never know. I'm kind of biased against the business suit, business jacket. It looks a little bigger, boxier, and more masculine typically. And sometimes it's our favorite thing. Mm. And sometimes I don't anticipate it. But every time it happens, I say, wow, Sally, aren't you glad we did that? Because maybe she was biased against it too. It affects the vibe and affects the look of the shot, even though I tend to de-emphasize it the way I compose headshots. And so it's good to mess around with that stuff. So that's another, I think, problem is just coming in with preconceptions. Because, yeah, a lot of them are going to be right, but they're not all going to be right. Be prepared. Like, get sleep the night before. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. Have, you know, different changes of clothes to try different things and come in with some energy too, because it takes a lot more than you would think. It's almost like teaching somebody to play golf, you know. It's don't shift your weight back. Keep your weight on the front foot. And it's awkward at first sometimes, but then by the end, boom, you know, you're banging them and hitting them straight.
The hearing. You're an attorney with a passion to perform, a drive to be absolutely on your game. With superior resources, serious preparation, and total confidence. Be your best with Thomson Reuters Practical Law.
As allegiances are tested.
You're gambling with World War III.
And regimes fall.
Fighters and civilians continue to stream in from other parts of Syria.
No matter where the story is, Reuters World News podcast is there. We make sense of the news shaping our world and give you everything you need to know in a 10-minute podcast every weekday. I'm your host, Kim Vanell. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
For the men who are listening in, what are some tips that they can use when they're coming in for their headshots? I know you mentioned some of the ladies that come in and between the dresses, the neck attire, things of that sort. But for the men, what are some tips that they can use as well?
So for men's clothes, it's a lot simpler. Dudes have got it. There's a couple of ways we got it easier. And clothes is one of them. There are just fewer variables. So for guys, it's so much simpler. Mm-hmm. Most of the guys I'm shooting have on jackets. So the first thing I'll say is I love the no tie look. That doesn't mean that it's right for every male lawyer, but like the jacket, no tie, it's like a contemporary gentleman's uniform. You look like a serious dude, but it's just cooler. You know, you could be an athlete, an artist, an actor, the guy who owns the business. It's handsome on men. It's versatile. I love it. And I think it's a mistake not to try it, but you know, some guys are going to need the tie shots also, but there are a couple of specifics I'll give you. Number one, the jacket needs to fit you. Some guys still come in with their pre-COVID jackets, and when they try to button them up, the lapel bulges out because it's too tight. And if you don't button it, the lapels drop straight down, which makes it look like your body's big and pushing it open, or you're sloppy and don't have the jacket buttoned up. That convergence of the lapels towards the bottom is more aesthetic and looks more athletic. Another problem is the shirts that they wear underneath. It's hard to beat the classic white or light blue Oxford shirts. If you wear some kind of gingham situation, or even one of the shirts that has like a light check or a light stripe, I just think it looks lower status. It looks less classic. More classic stuff is going to tend to be a little simpler and look more prestigious as a result. It's kind of counterintuitive, I think. The simpler stuff maybe being better. But yeah, shirts with a light stripe or a light check are no good. I still see guys wearing the shirts that have the button-down collars. It looks informal. It's like the history of that style is an informal shirt. It's more of a sporting shirt. So I would stay away from those. Usually a spread or a semi-spread collar looks better. And if they are doing ties that they don't have to be solid, but just more solid appearing ties. Like it could have a crazy complicated pattern, but if I run 15 yards away and hold it up, yeah, it looks like a gold tie or looks like a red tie, as opposed to a tie that has chunky diagonal stripes where the stripes are contrasty colors like navy and gold. Maybe in real life it's fine, but in the headshot, it's kind of busy and distracting. And if we go back to my premise that the main reason we're doing this is so that the face communicates confidence and likability, then why would you want other stuff in the frame that's distracting? Why would you shoot them outside? Why would you wear your floral print dress? Why would the guy have on a gingham-y kind of shirt with his jacket? It's hard for me to say with a straight face. Mm-hmm. But I see those mistakes over and over again.
Two things I want to ask you about, Chris. And the first being, I want to tie back to some of the attire that people are wearing in their headshot photographs. I read your blog on your website, and you mentioned this red jacket. And
I love that red jacket.
You love the red jacket. Tell me why or why not an individual might want to incorporate more color in their headshot.
Yeah, the first thing I'll tell you about color is that there's no color that universally works or does not work on humans. everybody is going to have certain colors that look good on them. Mm-hmm. Like navy tends to look good on me. They're going to be people who look better in, you know, in gold and stuff like that. And what I normally tell clients is just bring it a variety of your colors. I'm not one of those guys who's like, ooh, red's a power color. Like, I don't know, maybe it is, but I don't believe in crystals and stuff. So, if it is, great. But to me, it's more important, does it look good on you? Mm-hmm. If it's a good color on you, then you're going to present well. And if your face looks confident, that's the thing. That's a big, I know this wasn't your question, but that's a big misconception. People think other things have a bigger effect on the appearance of confidence than they do. The color of your garment is not going to help that much. I had a woman in a consultation call a couple of weeks ago say, hey, can you pull back and shoot more of my body when we do the headshots? And I said, why do you want to do that? And she said, so that I can cross my arms so that I'll look confident. And that I should have mentioned that as an answer to one of your previous questions. That's one of the dumbest things that I see. I hate it. So at best, an arms cross is a closed off body language. That's the best you get out of it. If you want to look closed off, then that's a good way to accomplish it. But it's not confident, because in what they do with women just makes me so mad, because they don't have them cross their arms like humans. Again, I'm going to have to describe this. When humans cross their arms, it's one hand up, one hand down. It's like a knot, like when you tie your shoe, that first part of the knot, because it doesn't take a lot of effort. That's why an arms cross is a thing. It's something for me to do with my hands. It doesn't take a lot of effort. The minute the down hand is pulled out and either splayed across the arm or whatever they do with it, now you're hugging yourself. You can't see me. I'll get up here. You're basically doing this. Sometimes they'll do the hand like this. And it turns it into a self-hug. And this is where I get mad about it. A self-hug is a self-comforting gesture. It is the antithesis of confidence. So going back to color, I got off on a tangent. That's how you can tell I love what I do. I rant. But yeah, the arms cross is terrible. So colors, just your colors. I don't care. I think with guys, sometimes with ties, I may be a little more sensitive to it. Like the guy wants to wear a green tie. I've seen some guys wear the green tie, actually look pretty good on them, but usually it's not my favorite. We tend to go for like the golds and the reds and the blues. Here's another thing about color that's big. And I think I've been doing this for a while, so there should be examples on my website and social media of it. I actually like it with a more limited color palette. I'll sometimes do that with the ties. Like the guy has on a jacket that has some blue in it. You'd think that a blue tie would be kind of, I don't know, it just wouldn't have contrast. It wouldn't stand out. It would look a little washed out. And sometimes it's not our favorite, but sometimes it looks really sharp. It's almost like, and I'll do that with the backgrounds too. I'll shoot, if he's got a blue jacket, I might have him on a bluish, not a conspicuous background, but it might have a bit of a blue tint to it. It's almost like when a painter works with a limited color palette. It's like another type of simplification driving attention to the face, that taking another element out of the picture. And it'll look good. Sometimes it looks like the person's got a book and or product or something. It looks like it was done by a big high-end media team. But that type of simplification helps drive attention to the face. And remember, my premise is that's the main reason we're here, so that the face communicates some ratio of confidence to likability.
I want to go back to your comment about the arms crossed. And I would, if I were taking a headshot photograph, I would wonder, what am I supposed to do with my arms? Or better yet, are you going to crop me where more of my face is showing versus more of my body? How is the crop going to be on this, you know, photograph?
Ms. Frazier, you have touched on another really important area. This is a great question. So I'm going to talk more about crops here. But I'm going to talk about all that. This is hugely important. So you notice I say, when I told my story, she said, well, can we pull back? Because I crop headshots, top of the head, about mid-deltoid is my favorite. If you look at my website, they're cropped really closely, and it is on purpose. Mm. It makes them look better. And what do you see at law firms? Vertical crop. I crop them horizontally. I crop them horizontally because it opens the frame up a little bit. It gives us a lot of negative space without making feel like we're crammed in this coffin. It also works better, I think, because human vision, even though we're over a decade with these vertical devices that we look at content on, but still to me, the horizontal frame feels better. It's more like human vision. We see more to the sides than we do up and down. It's still more cinematic. I think it is vastly superior. Law firms still do things the way they've always done them. That's always their answer. If you start quizzing these people, why do you do it this way? They might hem and haw because they feel like, well, I don't really have a good answer. But if you really, if it's like a depot and you really box them into a corner, they eventually say, well, it's just kind of always, we've always done it that way. They'll do the vertical crop down into the person's gut and they don't have a good reason for it. I was talking to a firm had hired me and they said, hey, talk to our web guys, make sure you get them what they need. And the web guy said, hey, I need full head, full shoulder, shoot them down to the waist. And I said, why would I shoot them down to the waist? And they said, so we have cropping options later, which is a reasonable answer. I get it. You can crop them at the waist. You can crop them a little higher. You can crop them a little higher. You can crop them a little higher. So like a depot, I said, okay, let me ask you a different question. Why would you show any of these people down to the waist? And there was just silence. And then the guy said, well, give me half torso. In other words, he punted because he didn't have a reason for it. I'll tell you why I hate it. Besides, I don't like the vertical crops as much for most headshots. It is a bunch of useless information. The torso doesn't tell us anything. I mean, yeah, I guess we can see a little more of your outfit. And if that's super important to you, then great. But for me and my clients, it's not. We're here because the face communicates confidence and likability in some ratio. And pulling back, not only does it add nothing, sometimes it adds something that makes people feel not as good because they're not as proud of their torsos. And then it makes the face smaller. The more I pull back, the smaller the face gets. And why would I do that? I hate those crops. So what do you do with your hands? Here's the good thing. When I'm shooting, you don't have to do anything with your hands. You just put them down at your side. Now, there's sometimes I'll do certain things with people. Like if a woman has on a sleeveless top or dress, there's sometimes things that we'll do with the arms to make them feel a little more slim because I've never photographed a woman who wanted to look bigger than necessary. And there's stuff that we can do. But normal, the way that I do my clients is I do shoot about mid-torso just so they have it. Because if I ever hear from them again, I want it to be, hey, the whole firm wants you now. Or, hey, my guy and I are over at Clarkwood. Come join, get your girl, join us for a drink. I want those emails and calls and texts. I don't want, oh, I'm having trouble using this. So I give people a slightly pulled back version, but I also give them a version cropped. Like I like to crop them and I always tell them, hey, I'm giving you the other one. It's dangerous. I recommend you don't use it, but there it is. Here's the one that I created for you. And in all of those shots, the people are standing just with their arms down at their sides. And if they have trouble with it and they're a litigator, I'll tell them, well, what do you do when the jury walks in? Are you cupping your hands over your front?
Thank you, Chris. Now tell me, I don't think any conversation is going to be complete without a discussion about AI. And a lot of millennials and some Gen Xers are using AI for their headshot photograph. Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things I have to recognize up front. One is I'm obviously biased because if everybody starts doing AI headshots, I got to figure something else to do. Yeah. And I think for some people, it might be as long as it comports with their values, as we'll discuss in a second, maybe it's good for some people. I can imagine a woman who maybe she's a single mom, doesn't have a lot of extra time, doesn't have a lot of extra money, and she's working hard and gets a bump up at work. Didn't need a headshot before, but now all of a sudden she needs one. Okay, maybe, I don't know what they cost. Maybe you pay $20 and you upload 20 selfies or whatever, and then you got a shot and you're like, oh, okay. So maybe it works for somebody like that. I am vehemently opposed, as you might imagine. I cannot imagine in a million years that I, even if I didn't know what I know now about imagery and headshots and confidence, that I would do it. It's just so weird. It's like, I sure wouldn't do it on a dating app. You imagine like if I'm on Hinge or Bumble or something, I put up these fake pictures of myself, no matter how accurate I think they might be, that would be so weird. How embarrassed would I be if I'm on a date with somebody and they say, oh, that was a cool picture. Where was that taken? And then I've got to say, oh, it was AI. I wouldn't do it. It's weird to me. It seems dishonest. I'll give you a more compelling reason at the end. I'm going to save it to the end. But it does seem dishonest to me because it purports to be two things that it's not. One is that it purports to be a photograph, and it's not a photograph. If it doesn't pass as a photograph, then it doesn't work. Then it's an avatar. It's not a headshot of you. So people have to be fooled into thinking that it's a picture of you, and then they have to be fooled into thinking that it's of you, and neither of those are true. Some people don't have any scruples about that, and it's fine. I think their moral compass is bent, but it's fine. I was looking at a thread on LinkedIn the other day, and it was fascinating seeing the people chiming in on both sides and the reasoning they gave for it. One woman said, "Oh, I love my AI headshot. It looks just like me." Guys, if you think your AI headshot looks just like you, you're catfishing yourself, which is amazing. If I knew somebody was doing that, and I'm sure that I don't catch some of them, I would think less of the person. It's such a low effort thing to do. I think if you're a lawyer and you're successful, you're probably not going to do low effort stuff like that. Here's a more practical reason why I don't like it, is if I haven't tried to bully people enough with my previous answers, but I just hate it so much. And given the constraints of this podcast, that's the only way I can express my invective. But the probably most compelling reason I would give people is that something we talked about at the very beginning. Remember, I talked about all the young lawyers and the way they wanted to present themselves. With AI, you are rolling the dice. You get whatever. And there was not in the thread on LinkedIn that I was looking at the time I looked at it, there was not one discussion of expression or vibe or whatever. And I think the main reason that we're doing this is not to put a name with a face. That is a true answer, but it's not the main one. Not to establish rapport. That's maybe true, but it's not the main one. It's so that you make a good first impression on people that you want to make. When it's me, most of the time, yeah, I want to look like I'm an okay guy, but I want to look hyper confident. So that's usually what I do. With AI, here's a picture of me in the street. Oh, here's one with trees. Oh, I like that shot. It dumbs it down to the most superficial analysis. Do I like it? Do I think it looks like me? And that's it. And if you think it looks like you, you are catfishing yourself.
Now we're at the close of our interview, but I want to ask you one thing. What is your number one piece of advice when it comes to headshots? What is something that you feel that is just important to share with our audience as we close out?
That's the hardest question you've asked, because you've pulled a lot of screed out of me, but you also pulled like a lot of, yeah, not your fault. I just love this stuff, so I do it. But we've talked about a lot of important things and a lot of things that are just not on people's radar and not on a lot of headshot photographers' radar. If I had to distill it all down to the most important element, I would say you can be good in pictures. You just don't know how to do it, and it's not your fault. It is not your area of expertise. And that thing that you hate about yourself, probably a lot of people don't see it. And it's making you do weird stuff in pictures that people do notice. It is possible for you to be the best version of yourself. I sound like a motivational speaker here, but this is absolutely true. I'm not making this up. I don't know who's listening to this. I benefit nothing other than being on a very prestigious podcast, which I appreciate the invite. Y'all are lovely. But you can be great. And you've just got to find somebody to coach you through it. And there's people all over the place. There are people out there that can make you look great. And the really cool thing about it is, yeah, we're memorializing it in that picture. Like, wow, ooh, okay. I do like my little soft smile more than I thought. And I love how confident I look. That's great. But imagine now that I can take that out into the real world. If you want to have like one really good shot where you look really confident, really handsome, that's great. But if you've been coached to do that, then you're more likely to be able to take that out into the real world and turn it on command. We didn't talk about this, but there's two things in common between being photogenic and being charismatic. And that thing in common is expression. And if you go on YouTube and search for how to be charismatic, there's a zillion videos. They rarely talk about expression. And when they do, it's always lumped in with body language. And expression's the number one thing, because just the thing I do with my eyes can make me look really confident. And mix it in with a soft smile that looks authentic and I look like a good guy. And that will really affect the way that people interact with me. And sometimes when I'm ranting here on the podcast, you may have seen my face and I look freaked out because I'm not here. I'm in a room by myself, but it's really cool to be able to do it in real life. So I think if you nail it in the picture, that's like a bit of coaching to then do it in real life and really up your game.
Nice. Thank you so much, Chris. I really enjoyed talking to you today. And I'm so grateful for all the helpful tips that you gave us in regards to headshots and how to make certain that we're exuding the confidence from inside out.
Decades ago, when I first logged into Westlaw, I never would imagine in a million years I'd be on a fine Thomson Reuters program like this with very lovely people. So again, great pleasure to be here with y'all. Thank you for letting me rant about something that I love.
Fantastic.
The Hearing.
Thank you so much to Chris for chatting with me, and thank you all for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please do like and subscribe for more content. As always, we love receiving feedback, and if you want to comment on anything you've heard today, please email us at thehearing@thomsonreuters.com.
The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters. To find out more, go to tr.com/thehearing or subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.